Hi, my name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic in recovery. It's so great to be here with you guys that I'm a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
It's nice to say that after 10 days. I haven't said that, and it's nice to be in a meeting with you guys. I was away on a cruise with my mom and dad that are here, my wife Sandra, my beautiful wife Sandra. My mom and dad always say that's the way I introduce her, my beautiful wife, and that's the way that I feel. Hey, John, good to see you. I'm going to tell you a couple stories tonight about forgiveness. I'm going to tell you a couple stories tonight about amends. And it's not going to be comfortable tonight. I see that there's a lot of new people in the room, and I pray that you guys take this time to really listen. I pray that you take this as serious as you possibly can. I pray that tonight you listen with ears that you never listened with before. 2 weeks ago, we had an amazing meeting in here, and we discussed the sixth step. And a good friend of mine came up afterwards, and she said to me, "Did you hear about so-and-so?" I said, "No, what? I just saw her in church last week. How's she doing?" And she said to me, she committed suicide. You see, brothers, this is what I want to tell you. This is even though we don't take ourselves seriously, we need to take our disease seriously. This is life and death. You see, the people that are inside the room right now are the winners. You're already here. You don't have to come to believe. You're already here. There's a whole bunch of scoffers, there's a whole bunch of mockers, there's a whole bunch of people that'll never get in here, and our friend Sherry that just died in the last couple weeks. She won't be back. So if you think that I'm going to take it easy on the room tonight, there's going to be some soft says. It's not going to be like that, because I believe in the gift of sobriety so sincerely that I believe that every meeting we come to, that as soon as the prayer starts in the beginning, and as soon as it ends at the end, that for that hour we need to be so serious about our sobriety. Text messaging, the phones, what we're doing after the meeting, where we're going to dinner. I think that all pales in comparison to life and death, don't you? Yes. Doctor? All right, settle down. Settle down. Now, I also want to say something to you. If you haven't been in a meeting in another part of the country or even another part of this state, if the only thing that you're subjected to, if the only thing that you're blessed is to come to meetings like this, you're not even going to understand how lucky you are. You're not even going to understand the type of meetings that you're involved in. Now, go to a meeting in another place like I went to on the cruise ship while I was away. It was three people. One lady got sober. She went into a treatment program. She's never been back to AA again. The other lady was a member of another 12-step fellowship. She had a strong program, but she wasn't in AA. And then myself. And I also have been to other meetings lately where, and I have sponsees that are visiting tonight. Doug's visiting from New Jersey. And I have a bunch of sponsees that are listening on tape. Sorry, Steve. And they're listening around the country, and they call into me, and they let me know that the meetings aren't the same. And let me tell you something. As I'm going around to meetings around, they're not the same. Now, like a fish that doesn't know they're in water because they're already in water, when they get out of water, when a fish gets thrown onto land, or when a fish takes a jump and it gets out, or when a fish gets caught and it's flapping around, and then it realizes, man, that water was precious. I want you to understand, in Alcoholics Anonymous, meetings like this, places like this, are rare. So I can imagine if you're hearing this message for the first time, or obviously you're young. I wouldn't say if you're young, because obviously you're young. You might think, well, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I do know what I'm talking about, because I'm going to meetings in different places and I'm hearing stuff that is just bizarre. They're speaking about a program that's not in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're speaking about a program that is invented by men and women in the rooms because they're miserable and they want to develop programs around the misery so that it sounds like that's what the program is. But it's not. The Big Book has the program. It is the program. The fellowship is different. The fellowship like we have with the West Side Men's Group and like what we have at Victory, that's incredible. And the fellowship keeps you excited and it wants you to go to the next meeting and you want to hug your friends and you can't wait to see them. And the fellowship is incredible, but it's not the program. The program is outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and let me tell you, they do a great job with it. Tonight we're going to do a lot of reading, and I know that as soon as I say that, you guys are like, oh. But they describe the ninth step so perfectly in the Big Book. couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the sixth and seventh step, I didn't speak a lot about the big book because it's only two paragraphs. But when it comes to the ninth step, the power is in the big book. When it comes to the ninth step, when it comes to the promises, the power is in the big book. And we say the promises inside meetings, you know, we'll be amazed before we're halfway. We say them like we're chanting something like Kumbaya and around some campfire, and it's like, it doesn't mean anything anymore. But I'm going to ask you tonight, when we read the promises, that you listen to it with new ears. That you listen to the promises like some of the young people are going to do it tonight. They're going to listen to it for the first time. And I'm going to ask you guys, even John, I'm going to ask you guys that have listened to it for forever, to listen to the promises with new ears. Because when they say that you will be amazed before you're halfway through, they choose the words carefully. That you will be amazed before you're halfway through. And people belittle that. They're like, well, that's, you know, they break it down, they say, you'll be amazed before you're halfway through the ninth step. Yeah, that is true. But what they really mean is that you'll be amazed if you're really doing the ninth step, because nobody that half measures it really does the ninth step. And I don't mean walking through and you see your husband or your wife or your past girlfriend and you walk up to them and you go, you know that stuff I used to do, I'm sorry for it, and you continue walking. That's not what I mean. I mean, when they say make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would harm, injure them or others. I'm talking about actually making appointments, showing up in places that you don't want to, and making amends to people that may not like you. Making amends to people that might hate you. Making amends to people that you destroyed their lives. See, if you're doing that type of program, you will be amazed before you're halfway through, because you're actually in the program, in the middle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. People that are on the outskirts don't visit people that hate them to make amends. People that are doing this because there's nothing better on television tonight or their DVR broke down don't do the ninth step. But people that have been fearless and searching in their moral inventory on step four, people that went and shared it with a sponsor or a mentor or a guide in step five, people that have asked God to take away their defects of character in six and seven, people that wrote down from the fourth step, they go through the fourth step, they go with their sponsor, and the sponsor says, and they say, listen, I need to make amends to Todd, I need to make amends to Sally, I need to make amends to my wife, I need to make amends to my father. People that have written down their amends list and people's names, those people are the winners. Those people are serious about that program. Tony, I'm sure you, I don't know, but I haven't met anyone that goes out during the ninth step amends. I say Tony because Tony has 39 years and he probably has heard that, but I haven't. I haven't heard anyone that's in the middle of the program doing things that are just not in our comfort zone. Nobody wants to walk up to someone and say, can I speak to you, a person that hates you, a person that you've harmed, a person you've cheated on, a person you've stole from, may I speak with you? That's the last thing that an alcoholic or a recovering drug addict wants to do. We spend our whole lives escaping. We spend our whole lives shunning responsibilities. No one wants to meet head on their responsibilities. And yet they say that the miracles happen when you get through this, halfway through the ninth step. That we will know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, we say that in the meetings. People read it at the end of the meetings like it's a Chinese fortune cookie. You'll know a new freedom and a new happiness. Won't regret the past. We'll have to shut the door on it. But I want to tell you that when they say a new freedom and a new happiness, they really mean that. You see, this specific step comes from the Bible. This specific step is handed out from God. This specific step is done in all major religions. We're not talking about one religion. We're talking about all major religions. Confession and then making amends. Confession and restitution. Meeting the people that you've harmed head on. All major deals around the world. And when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, we want to sometimes think maybe we can skip this one. But the people that choose not to skip this step, That's where the miracle happens. Now, let's just say this is your first meeting tonight, or you're new, or you're in a treatment center, or you're just coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you wonder exactly what I'm talking about, or you think, you know, what is this whole thing about making amends? Let me backtrack for a second. Every one of us comes in as a newcomer. Let me just see a show of hands. Has anybody in here ever come in as a newcomer? Okay, so obviously there's been some other people newcomers. What that means is that everyone comes in here desperate and new. Some people receive white chips with lattes in their hand. Other people are shaking as they walk up here. It all depends on... Some people come here in Ferraris. Other people come here in cardboard boxes. Everybody in here has a different bottom. My first time around, I came in when I was 23 years old. My parents sent me to treatment. I came in with my Cavaricci's and my four gold chains. I'm Italian from Long Island. I had my slick back hair when I had more hair. And I was wearing all my, I had my nice clothes on. My parents let me pack a bag and I showed up in Minnesota. And I was like, I have arrived. I was 25 years before the situation ever came into this world. I showed up in Minnesota and I was like, I have arrived. And the counselors looked over at me, and my counselor, Tom Cunningham, he looked over at me, and he had written a book called King Baby. And he said to me, you know, I have a perfect book for you. It's called King Baby. And I said, what do you mean by that, King Baby? I'm nobody's King Baby. I'm here for recovery. And I thought I was the God's gift to recovery. I was 22, and I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and a couple years down the road, I relapsed into crack cocaine. I'm not going to get into that because that's Alcoholics Anonymous. My Cavaricci's were gone. My gel was gone. My hair was a mess. I was rolling myself up in carpets in people's homes so nobody could find me. Thought I had a great hiding place. Thought nobody could see me, rolled up in the carpet. One eye sticking out of the carpet. My pizzazz was gone. Next thing you know, I'm in treatment again. Not so fun for the third time. Not so cool. No carry-on bags. No Gucci suitcase. Walking in there with my public shopping bag. Got my underwear in one bag. My one t-shirt. My flip-flops. It's not cool when you're in Minnesota with flip-flops. It's negative 40. Hit a different bottom. I didn't think the steps applied to me. I thought the steps were very cool. I think there was a good concept. But I didn't really think that was applicable to my life. I'm kind of a college guy, and had a lot of chains, hair sticking out of my, you know, that kind of thing. I thought to myself, this is maybe a little bit, you guys are taking a little too seriously, this steps. I relapsed again after that. Called my parents, breaking their heart. I was dating a beautiful girl named Jamie. They didn't know addiction. I wreaked havoc on that house, wreaked havoc on that girl's family, wreaked havoc on her parents, broken promises. Finally got into another halfway house, and on my way to that halfway house, I was going to make a right or I was going to make a left. Left was going to go to North Minneapolis, which was the bad part of town. Right was going to take me to Crossroads Halfway House. Right was going to be Crossroads Halfway House. Left was going to be North Minneapolis. I decided to go to North Minneapolis to see if any of my deals were there to show them how good I looked after a couple months of treatment. Showed up all beefcaked. They're like, hey, Steve, what's up? So good to see you. You look good. And that was my childhood. That was the way I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I was in detox again. And then I was broken. You see, but along that way, I created wreckage that I can't make amends for in South Florida. I did things to families in North Minneapolis. I did things to families in North towns there that I can't get back to. I can't go back and apologize to Jamie and say to her, listen, remember all that stuff I did to you, all the terror I caused you? I want to apologize for that. Because it says, though, in this step, except when to do so would injure them or others, and to even contact that woman would injure her or others. She's married, she has children, hopefully she's forgotten that whole terrible error. But what I do in this case is I make amends to other women inside the program, and I treat them with respect. You see, when I look at you or when I speak to you, the way that I speak to you inside AA is the same way that I'm going to speak to you in the parking lot of AA. Because I used to be so disrespectful, the way that I make amends is I'm respectful now. So I'm in AA. I'm about 3 years in AA. I'm 29 years old. I got all the answers. Maybe I'm 28 years old. Yeah, I'm 28 years old. I'm 3 years in AA. I got my sponsees following me, and I'm going to the Fort Lauderdale men's group. I told you it's not going to be fun topics tonight. This is going to be stuff that it's going to be brutally honest. I need you to hear what it is to create wreckage in your sobriety. I need you to hear that if we don't make amends and we don't live this, you could be a raving bad person in AA. Anybody ever met people that were bad people in AA? That weren't living the principles in AA, that were trying to do the 13th step in AA, that when you see a newcomer girl in AA, that all of a sudden that guy, some 55-year-old guy, wants to go tell him how the program works? And vice versa? Well, I'm driving out of a meeting out of Alcoholics Anonymous in the Fort Lauderdale men's group, and I got my sponsee following me, Matt Cunningham. Just talk at will. Just have a good time in there. And my car pulls into the Bank of America parking lot. I have a full-time girlfriend. Her name is Sandra, my wife now. I was about to get engaged to her. I'm in a committed relationship. And I get arrested for trying to pick up a prostitute. 3 years clean and sober. 28 years old. And I'm inside that jail cell sober. I was leaving a meeting. Now, listen, I've been in jail, not sober. And when you're not sober, you have a reason. But when you're in jail sober for that type of behavior and someone recognizes in you and the guy's like, hey, Stevie B, what's up? And you're sober, the pit, that God-sized hole, is growing so deep. And you're so embarrassed and you're so disgusted because it's understandable when you're out there. But it's not understandable when you're supposed to be living these principles in all your affairs. Now, you might wonder, how can I say this in front of my wife that's sitting there? What kind of a man can say this from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous? I need to let you know, a broken man. I needed to let you know that when I came to my wife to tell her and make amends to her and say to her, listen, Sandy, this is what I did. This is who I was, and this is who I am today. Now, why did I need to tell her that? Doesn't it say, except when to do so would injure them or others? Except when to do so would harm them. Why am I having problems with this? May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Why would I need to tell my wife now, 10 years later, or 8 years later when I told her, that back in the day, before my relapse, I had tried to pick up a girl and it was a police officer. Can you imagine that conversation? Can you imagine the degradation inside my heart? Now I'm telling her I'm 3 years sober this time around after I relapsed. Now I'm three years sober. And I said, Sandy, I got to tell you something. I needed to tell her because she was going to find out. Because I was carrying around this guilt that was so heavy on my heart. Every time that something good was happening in our lives, I was thinking to myself, yeah, but you don't know the real man I am. And I needed to just do it. I needed to just be honest. And I needed to tell my parents too. I need to say, this was the man I was, but this is not the man I am today. And how do I make amends to someone? How do I make amends to my wife on a daily basis for stuff that I did back then? Let me tell you. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I missed a meeting here, and I wasn't out of town. My wife had theater tickets. We were right around the corner from here. She said to me, "Sweetheart, I would like you to go to the theater with me." Now, this is a Tuesday night step meeting. I mean, I'm having a great time up here. I'm loving this. It was like six step week. You know, I was all ramped up and I had notes and I had sticky notes and I was all excited. And she said, "Sweetheart, this is theater night." Now, we had gotten those tickets last year. I said, "I know, sweetheart, but I'm doing the steps at the 12-step house. There's like 250 people going." And she looked at me and she said, "I know." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Okay, I'll call Jimmy and Wendy and Jerry and I'll let them know and Owen and hopefully they'll be okay with it." And I made that call like that because that's how I make amends to my wife for things that I did that I can't go back and undo. And this is what I want to tell you guys. I want you ladies to listen to this, and I want you gentlemen to listen to this. It's very important. You did stuff in your life. Some of the stuff you can't undo. But I want you to know that asking God for forgiveness, He does forgive you. I need you to hear that. That sometimes we'll be able to receive forgiveness from the people we harm, and sometimes it can only come from God. It's very clear, though, that God does not hold that against us once we ask for forgiveness. And I mean, there's nothing that He holds against us. Now, you have to get to a place where you believe that. George, I know you believe that. I believe that. But it took me a long time to get to a place where I believed that all the horrible stuff that I did to women and men and people that I can't go back to, that God does forgive me. But let me tell you something. He does. And given the same set of circumstances, if you had a choice to murder or not, or do a sin or not, if you knew better, you wouldn't do it, and He knows that. You see, regardless of what your past is, when they say that you will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, I mean seriously. How would you like to walk out of here tonight, a free man or woman, not having any guilt or shame? You walk out of here, you came in here one way tonight, and you're going to leave another way. How would you like that? Don't raise your hand, but I believe that you would like that. And I want to tell you something. Right here, right now, a sincere prayer to God of your understanding, and He forgives you. Now, the first time I heard that message, I was like, "Well, you don't know what I did." My sponsor does, though. My sponsor's just a man. He's just a broken man. He's just a man in AA, and he forgave me. I was able to do it in my fifth step. I was able to go to him and say, "Listen, this is the stuff that I did." And Jerry said, "Is that all there is?" And then I told him the one, which I just shared with you. I had never spoke about that to another human being. I shared that with him. I felt so terrible about it. And Jerry says to me, and let me tell you something. I want you to pay attention. Everybody's eyes come up. "That wasn't even the worst one. I'm only giving you like the worst one for my wife. I mean, I have stuff worse than that." That I was leaving my four step. And I was leaving and I was like, doo-doo-doo, you know, giving Jerry the shuckle and jive. Like, "That was great. God's all over us. Woo." And he could tell right through me. He knew I was whistling Dixie. He's like that. He's like, "Are you sure you didn't leave anything out?" I'm like, "No, I didn't leave anything out." And he goes like this. "Are you sure?" Okay. I told it to him. And in the fifth step, it says to share with another human being and God. And Jerry said to me, "Do you know that God forgives you, right?" I said, "I don't know about that one." He said, "It does." And He does. So in 6 and 7, I started asking God to show me how to give these things to Him. Let me tell you another story. Did some terrible things in sobriety. Not this sobriety round, but my last sobriety. And I relapsed, and I paid the price. It was awful. A couple months ago, maybe last year when I was doing the steps here. I don't know, I was doing the steps here one time. I looked over the audience, everyone was laughing. I had them going, we were having a good time. It was one of the fun steps. The ninth step is not one of the fun steps. But listen, miracle step. And everyone was laughing, I was giving them my good jokes and doing my powerlessness jokes, and everyone was laughing. I see this one girl, she's not laughing. And I'm trying to think, why is this one girl not laughing? Because one of the defects or one of the gifts I have is I can tell everybody in the room what's going on. I mean, not going on within their mind, but I can tell if they're sleeping, nodding out, scratching themselves, on the cell phone. Thank you, Tony. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in here, and I can see them all. That's one of the things that I have. And I notice that this one girl, I'm hitting them with my best jokes. People are laughing. I see this one girl, she's not laughing. And I'm thinking, I said, who is that? And then I realize it was a girl that in my sobriety, I cheated with her when she was married. And I'm up here talking about spiritual steps. And I kept talking, and I noticed it, and she came up to me afterwards. I hadn't seen her in 20, I don't know, whenever I moved down here, 15 years ago? 16, 17 years ago? And she came up to me, and I said, listen. And she said, listen, before you say anything, I can tell you're a changed man. I told you the story, Jimmy. It was right here at the 12-step house. I said to her, I'm so sorry for what I did. I was a terrible person, and I really owe you an amends. She said, listen, I don't want to hear it. It's obviously you've given your life to God. She walked away. Those miracles don't happen if you don't meet what you've done in the past head on. Sometimes you're going to be able to meet the person. I always wanted to meet that woman. God made a way for me to meet that woman. Some people you're not going to be able to meet. Some of the stuff that you did, you're not going to be able to see them again. But you're going to be able to make amends to other people in other ways. People that you stole from, you get to be generous to other people. When you're a cheap miser and you're taking money from everybody, the way you make amends is you give, you give, you give. The basket comes around, you don't give a little dollar, you give five. You go to church, everyone else is giving a dollar, you give 20. That's how I make amends for all the things, financial things I do. I give and I give, I give. Let me tell you, my parents are sitting here, my wife is sitting here. If I had to go back with them and sit down and explain to them every bad thing that I ever did in their home, smoking crack in their house, stealing from them, lying to them, showing up in all different hours, every single time I say I was abducted by Colombian drug lords and I was held for hostage in Colombia and they needed to give ransom money. And all. If I had to go back and tell them every one of these stories, one time we were having Thanksgiving dinner and I was sitting there at Thanksgiving dinner. I said, pass the turkey. Next thing you know, I said, I'm going out to the car. I showed up 3 days later. Said I was abducted. Some people were driving by in Long Island and I got abducted. Chinese or Italian gang, they would just have been driving by Long Island. I was abducted for 3 days. The time that on Christmas morning is sacred in my house. Christmas morning, everyone comes down. We're going to look at the presents and stuff. I'm missing. I come home and my parents, my grandmother, my grandfather, everyone's crying. I mean, they're missing. You understand? Not that they thought I was on a run or something. I went to bed. Everyone wakes up in the morning. I'm missing. You don't get to just say you're sorry for that kind of stuff, guys. That's not an I'm sorry amends. That needs to be a living, one day at a time, rest of your life amends. And how do I make that amends? In a lot of different ways with my parents. My grandfather. My grandfather's hard to deal with. Keep my mouth shut a lot. A couple times the little things slip out the side. But I'd say all in all, over the past 17 years, I've done some great amends work in my family. Especially over the last 9 years. Even before my last relapse, my dad came and lived with me after he had drowned. For 3-4 months, I was there serving and loving and being present and just making amends. When my wife says certain things to me that sometimes I say yes. It's hard sometimes to get that out. You know, you heard the way I said yes. Sometimes I have to say yes, you know, like that. But you still say yes. Also, I want to tell you something, that deal that I made with my wife, because I was such a liar, because at 7 years of sobriety, and another guy at 7 years of sobriety, we came into the house, and we said we were going to meetings, and we were doing sobriety things, and we were getting high in the house, and because I was such a liar, my wife has the right, and she knows this, at any time that she ever suspects me, ever, drug test me right there, and I'll never be offended. I will never be offended. Because listen, I passed very few tests in my life. I didn't do good in school. But a drug test is one of the few tests I know I can pass right now. You know what I'm saying? That's one of the, I don't have to study. I don't have to study for that test. I know that if she gives me a drug test tonight, that's one of the few tests I'm passing right now. So I've said to my wife, because I was a liar, and in your face liar, like, oh no. One of those things that is on the table till the end, till we go to eternity together, is drug test. No matter what. People call me up. I think even Kenny called me up. People call me up all the time. They're like, listen, my wife has these terrible stipulations. She wants to drug test me. You're a liar, no? Yes? Well, you get to get drug tested. You're a liar. Now, if you never lied and you told the truth the entire time, and every time your wife said, or your girlfriend or your boyfriend said you're using, you said, absolutely, of course I am, then no, you should have no right to get it. But if you lied like I did, you give up that right. It's one of the few tests Andy and I, we take right now, we pass. I got nothing in my system. I don't want to belittle the miracles of step 9. I want to read this to you. I want you to hear this. You know, people say that this program was not based on religion, and they say the program is not based on God. They have never read the big book. They have never read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm not saying that you need to follow the religion I followed. I'm definitely not saying that. But to say that the big book is not based on any of that is ridiculousness. Just in this one page alone, and I could read for hours and hours and hours, and I had planned on reading like 12 pages, but it just didn't happen tonight. Just in this one page, in the first part, when they're talking about making amends, they say our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. Listen now, just in the first 2 seconds of the ninth step, they understood back then is that we had a religious, spiritual awakening. And all religious means is that we take an active approach in following God. And if you don't think we take an active approach in following God in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're wrong. Now, there's a lot of places around the country that don't follow the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in AA. A lot of places. There's a lot of places you go into a meeting and they suck the spirituality right from the bone marrow that you have. You walk out, you get like this. But I'm going to tell you something. This is not one of those places. South Florida, the 12-step house, the meetings that we have around Victory, all we do is talk about God. And it turns out, the good news is that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book is all they're talking about is God. In this step, they're talking about God. In the previous step, they're talking about God. In all the steps, they're talking about God. But this is what I want you to hear. That doesn't mean you need to be fully in your relationship with God right now. What it means is, hopefully, you'll believe that He believes in you and that your relationship will grow. See, nobody's saying that you need to come in here, put down the bottle, and all of a sudden be a spiritual guru. But what they are saying is that you need to have open-mindedness and willingness when it comes to your understanding about who God is. When I go into treatment centers, there's something that I like to say, and I'm going to share with you, is I like to say, if you don't believe in God, don't have any fear, because He believes in you. Brian, you know that I always said that. He believes in you. He's already understands that James was going to be here tonight, I was going to be here tonight, my mom and dad were going to be here tonight, and all of you were going to be here tonight, and He already gets it that we want to be forgiven. No matter what you've done. Listen to me what I just said. No matter what you've done. That if you go home tonight and you get down on the side of your bed and you say, God, I don't know if you're real. I don't know who you are. I don't know your name. But the speaker tonight said that if I asked you for forgiveness, I would be forgiven. And I want to put you to the test on that, God. I want to ask you to forgive me. And I'm telling you that as far as the east is to the west, you will be forgiven. If you have a sincere heart. I mean, if you're only asking to be forgiven so that you can do it again tomorrow morning, of course that's not a sincere heart. But if you did something in your life that you know that you can't undo, that you wouldn't have done it if you had all the information that you have now, that you did it at a time in your life that you were younger, that's so hideous, it's so heinous, and you think you can't be forgiven, I want to tell you something. You already are. Now, how about that? Doesn't that feel good? Doesn't that feel good that we're going to leave here tonight free men and women? Well, let me read this to you. And this only happens if you've already been making your amends process in the ninth step. This doesn't happen if you're just lackadaisical at taking the program. Maybe I'll take some of the steps, maybe some of them I'm not. This only happens if you do the work. Man, the ninth step in the big book. If you don't have the big book, please go get the big book. And if you haven't read the ninth step in the big book, like tonight I was going over my, and I was like, wow, this is some amazing things in here. You know, my friend Mason is traveling down from New York. He'll be here in a couple hours. He's newly sober again. And he's really excited about sobriety. He had tears of joy in his heart today because when he drove up to New York, he drove up high. And driving back from New York, he's sober. And he just spent the last 2 months up there in New York taking care of his mother hand and foot. Washing her, bathing her, feeding her, being with her, loving on her. This is a man that only had a month of sobriety, but knew that in order to show up as a man in recovery, he needed to make amends for all the things he did. Let me tell you something. Every day is a precious gift. You haven't called your parents this week? Call your parents tonight. Tell them thank you. You haven't called your brother from across town because he said something. You know, people in AA, we are the resentment junkies of the world. There's a guy that inside this meeting that I offended a couple weeks ago, he refuses to come back. It's his home group. Life is too short not to have the sunlight of the Spirit just showering us with love the entire time. Showering us with love. And the only thing that happens with showering with love is you like to let all that stuff go. So read the ninth step in the big book. I don't want to say challenge. Is challenge a good word for you guys? Yeah, challenge is actually a good word. Yeah. I was going to say yeah. Challenge is good because you'll do it just to spite me. That's awesome. Yeah, challenge is good for us. We are painstaking. You, do me this one favor, okay? Do me this one blessing. Do me this one blessing. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Jimmy, put your book bag down. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Just take a moment just to be in the presence of God for a moment. Just have a little faith. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom. And a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it because we are forgiven. I threw that in there. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Open your eyes. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Just because it's read at every meeting, do not minimize how important the promises are. Do not think that they're not real. Don't think that they don't apply to you. No matter how far down the scale you have gone, our experience can help the next person that's going down that same road. And God wants to shower every one of us with His forgiveness tonight. Regardless of what we've done, regardless of what we've been through. And more importantly than that, He also wants us to forgive everyone else in our life that we're holding resentments on. Everyone else. Because there's a spiritual axiom, and then I'll close with this. God only forgives you as much as you forgive others. Listen to that, brothers and sisters. You wanted to leave here and say that I was all hocus pocus. Listen to what I'm telling you. God only forgives you as much as you're willing to forgive the others. You did something in your earlier life that's just unbelievable, so terrible, person died because of you. You want to hold your resentment against somebody in the meeting because they took your chair? Your forgiveness is not going to happen. You need to forgive others, pray for them, and God will forgive you. I'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much.